Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. Guys, I'm really excited to bring a fun conversation to you with a good friend of mine, Larry Vaughn. Larry Vaughn is a successful entrepreneur, a successful printer. He has been one of the founders of DScoop and of Canon's new program called Think. And recently, he authored a fabulous book called Business Cards and Shoe Leather, How Dyslexia Helped Me Found One of the World's Premier Business Cooperatives. And the stories are really compelling. It's a fantastic analogy of embracing risk, embracing adversity. And I was thrilled to have this conversation with him. I think that you'll glean some lessons. It'll be a reminder of some things that need to inspire us day in and day out and to embrace change and embrace risk. So I'm just so thrilled to have had him on and so proud of him. So without further ado, give a listen to my conversation with my good friend, Larry Vaughn. My good friend, Larry Vaughn.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Did you have a good time at DScoop?
Always. Anytime there's a gathering in the industry, it's a good time. And it's always a lot of fun there because there's a lot of energy and people willing to look to be a little bit better than they are and be inspired. And so, I had a really good time and did my little talk and got some decent feedback. So it worked out well. How about you?
Same thing. I mean, I was very excited to be there. Of course, number one, being one of the founders, and I have been to every single DScoop except last year. I was not able to go, and it was, right close to me in Dallas, but I didn't get to see all the guys and the friends and all the acquaintances and get to meet all the new people. But same thing, I had a session, which I think you knew there.
Yep.
And it turned out well. I had good attendance and people stay engaged. And I didn't have anybody leave, which is always good. And I got some tremendous response afterwards. A lot of people came up to me to talk to me. And some of the people, especially this one young lady, one young girl, and she had problems being dyslexic. And she didn't learn to read until she was about 12 years old. And I got to talk to her. As a matter of fact, I called her yesterday morning to talk to her a little bit more in depth. So it was good. It was very, very good. And then me and my wife, I brought my little bride, and then she and I, afterwards, we went to Disney World for 3 days and had a big time.
Oh my gosh, that's great. Yeah. Isn't it funny how we measure our success by whether or not people leave in today's world? But you know what? It is the truth, right? I mean, we're all so ADD. It's hard I had the same thing happen, I swear to you. And I had a couple people, I noticed a couple people step up and as it got longer into the presentation, and a guy said to me, he says, it was really good. Not many people left. And I thought, oh yeah. I really appreciate the pat on the back there. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's funny.
I know. It's listen, I appreciate you taking the time, and I it was great seeing you, and you look good, and it's amazing to think that I've known you now, I don't even know, 10 years maybe, and obviously I've always thought that you're one of the good guys in the business, and I won't pump you up too much, but I'm so excited to hear about your book and talk to you a little bit about your perspective on some stuff. And so for, you know, let's just jump into it. I mean, this book, which is Business Cards and Shoe Leather, How Dyslexia Helped Me Found One of the World's Premier Business Cooperatives. So how, let me ask you first, how did you come to, I mean, what made you want to do this?
Well, I can tell you, for the longest time, you know, I just struggled with, and it was many years, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute, because, you know, I couldn't spell, you know, I couldn't read properly, and, you know, and I had a tough time just verbalizing, you know, sometimes in communication of what I was wanting to say.
Right.
And then I got into sales because it was easiest for me, okay, to get into sales. And I don't know, you just had the gift of gab. And so I was tickled to death to, you know, just find a job that paid well, you know,
right,
at the time, because, you know, that was what you say back in the day. Well, then that was in the late 70s when all that came about. And then, of course, I got super smart and decided to get in my business, you know, on my own, and then had a couple of failed businesses. But then finally I started understanding what in the world was going on. And I think you're familiar with Ideal Printers.
Yep.
And then we finally got to that point. Well, I was the first commercial printer in Texas to install an Indigo. It was not an HP Indigo. It was an Indigo. And so then in a short period of time, I think it was 6 or 8 months after I had purchased the Indigo, HP purchased Indigo. And they had merged, and HP saw what I was doing, and they reached out to me and wanted to know if I'd be in part of their council group, you know, their thought council groups. Francis McMahon, you know Francis.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And,
another one of the good guys.
A good guy, and he asked me to be on one of the, it's called DPAC, you know, the digital group that we were all trying to learn, because here again, you know, you've got basically a large computer, one of a kind, and then you've got all these little extras. Well, what kind of substrate you going to run in it? You know, what kind of software do you run on it? How do you, what's the tips and tricks for the machine?
Right.
So I joined the group, and it was a commitment for 2 years. It was 4 times a year. We met every quarter for 2 years, and there was 12 of us, I believe, 10 or 12 of us, 12, I believe. And so all these guys were kind of, you know, forward thinkers, you know, in the print industry. And when it got down to the very last meeting, it was the 8th meeting, we were in Las Vegas, and I'll never forget it, Mark. And Francis says, Larry, you haven't really given a presentation yet. Why don't you get up and give the presentation? And I said, I'm good. The other guys do it. Well, anyway, everybody cheered me on and asked me to come up and, you know, and give the presentation, which I reluctantly did, and got up there. Mark, it was a total disaster.
Really?
Absolutely a total disaster. Very humiliating. And my peers, you know, they felt sorry for me. You know, but I stumbled through it and tried to get through it because I couldn't read what was on the flip chart, that the notes that we had taken, you know, to give to HP, you know, for them to take back to their corporate guys.
Right.
So as I finished up, you know, it was, a poor excuse for collapse. But anyway, I went by, and Francis didn't realize I was close to him. And he looked at the other gentleman sitting next to him. He says, God, did he even read it? Well, no, I didn't. I didn't read it. And after that meeting, well, then I got with my wife, and I told her, I said, Jody, I've got to learn how to read. I've got to be better than I am today if I'm going to remain in the business that I'm in and to succeed. So she and I started working together and started seeing what kind of workarounds. I mean, she's one of my greatest supporters to help me, you know, really become a businessman at that point.
Right.
Mark, I was 50 years old.
Yeah.
I was 50 years old when all that took place, and of course I'm soon to be 68 here for too long. And so at that time, then I started growing in business, and then I started, you know, being able to communicate properly. And then, you know, then came email. Email came along, you know, and then we had, you know, thank goodness, you know, for spell check and for Siri, that there was more tools for me to utilize to, you know, become a better communicator. And so I just felt that I had so much that went on during that point in my life that other people with the same issues and same problems, that it's okay.
Right.
You know, you just got to find workarounds, because I've said many times, you know, some of your greatest failures, you know, can be your biggest successes.
Right.
And I've just taken that and been able to face those obstacles. And then I thought, well, I'm going to write a book. And I'm going to tell you something very interesting about writing the book.
Right.
I sat on my back porch for 2 years with my iPad. And, you know, I would write some things down, and then I would verbally talk to, you know, Siri, you know, to my iPad.
Right.
And I started making notes about my book. And then it got to a point where I was going to have a ghostwriter. So I interviewed some ghostwriters and told them my issue and told them what I want. And a lady by the name of Ruby Peru, she was a fabulous ghostwriter that she and I hooked up. I sat on that back porch for 2 years, wrote the book, worked with Ruby hours on ends of recorded conversation. And then the book came to be, and I had 3 printed copies, and I put them in a Christmas box, wrapped them up, and I gave them to my daughter, my son, and my wife. They knew nothing about this. I told nobody that I was writing a book for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Until Christmas morning when they got the book.
No way.
So, oh, it was very emotional, Mark, and it was a hoot. Of course, I don't know if you know Jody, but she's a character in herself. And then, of course, she looked in her. She says, the man, when she opened the present, it was the last present. And she said, the man that cannot spell, cannot write, wrote a book.
Right.
And I said, yes, ma'am. That's what I've been doing on that back porch. And you were always asking me what I was doing back there.
And so
she looked at, and then she looked up and she said, what else are you hiding from me?
That's awesome. I mean, that is fantastic. And so, well, let me ask you, let's go back a little bit. When did you know that you had dyslexia? When was that diagnosed, if you will?
Well, it was when I was approximately about 26, 27 years old.
Okay.
Because back in the 50s, Mark, I mean, you know, people just really didn't understand, you know, what dyslexia was, or even discussed it, or even knew about it.
Right.
You know, I always knew that I wasn't the same in school as the rest of the other students. I'd always think, you know, how in the world do they do that? How are they reading that? How do they retain that and talk about, you know, the chapters that they've read in school? So I basically sold my way through school. You know, in grade school, through the sixth grade, you have the same teacher all day long. Well, then when I got up, and we had a junior high and a mid high and a high school, well, in the second 6 years of the of school, well, I had 6 separate teachers. I had one teacher for each class, so it started to be more of a struggle for me to really, you know, be able to make, you know, good grades in school and to learn. And then when I got into high school, then I was able to get into the distributive education program.
Mm-hmm.
Where I would work a half a day, you know, and go to school half a day. So I had DE for 1 hour, distributed education. And then I had history, which I was usually pretty good at history. I mean, it interested me a great deal. And then I had English, which I was terrible at. But there was a teacher there. Her name was Joan Woken. I mean, she knew that I had an issue, and she worked with me. She set me up in front of her desk, and she would work with me every day to make sure that I got through school. And then, you know, and then after that point, I knew there was something that was just not right. And then I tried to go to college. College was an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. So I immediately went into work, and I became a teller, I think it was, at one of the banks here in Houston. And then I said, this is just not for me. It's just not a fit. And I had a customer of mine that did very well in the printing industry. And I would, you know, talk to him. And I said, you think you can get me an interview? I got an interview. And they hired me, starved to death for 6 months. Then after I understood how to sell print, well, then, you know, out of 50 sales guys that we had, I was always in the top five, and usually, you know, right in the first and second position there within the sales. So, you know, at that time, well, then I had to get this figured out. And so then one of the doctors says, well, you're dyslexic is what it is. And I said, well, then I had to research it and study it and see what all it was all about. Did I do a lot about it at that point? No, I just kept selling and I had a good business and I was running that. But then finally, when I saw that I was getting out with peers and, you know, the print industry was changing, I said, I got to do something. So that's what drove me to actually learn how to, you know, spell and write and communicate better.
Right. Well, now tell me what is dyslexia? I mean, what is the deal? What happens?
Well, it happens a little bit different for different people, you know, of what you, what they see, but I'll never forget, you know, I see things backwards, you know, words like I might see, stop and I might read it as start, you know, And then growing up, when I was a kid, my mom would take me to the ophthalmologist every year, sometimes twice a year, and get me new glasses. She just knew there was something wrong with my eyes, you know.
Right.
And I still have all those glasses. I think I've got like 12 pair. My mom had got me in little old bitty ones when I was a kid. I still have them to this day. So that was, you know. That was a hoot in itself. My poor mom, you know, she just said, Larry, there's just something wrong with your eyes. You know, there's nothing wrong with you.
Right. That's fantastic. That's wild. So, I mean, and so as you pushed forward, you know, and over the course of time, what were the things that, I mean, what do you think the greatest lesson of it all? I mean, because funny thing is, and I think I mentioned this to you when I saw you, and that is, I've heard stories about people with dyslexia being really good at business. And I guess the question is that true? And two, is it rooted in a level of determination, or, you know, what is it that, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but what is it that makes that go?
It's very true. Because I know others that are dyslexic, but they, and just like you said, they're good business people. I mean, there's several, you know, billionaires out there that are very dyslexic. And that's like, take math. You know, I'm pretty dadgum good at math. I mean, I can do numbers in my head just real, pretty quick. And then I've got Annette, my admin, God love her, she's been with me forever today. And she says, Larry, how do you come up with those numbers so fast in your head? And I say, well, Annette, how do you spell those words so fast?
Yeah.
<You know?
laughs>
But it's just interesting. And like I've said, you know, many times before, you know, when once you take your struggles or once you take your failures and you really take and analyze them and look at them, well, they have made you where who you are today with your greatest strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking back, well, if I wasn't dyslexic, would I be where I am today? You know, I don't know if I would be, you know, because yes, is it just like you asked a while ago, is it a lot of determination? It is. A lot of hustle? Yes, it is. Do I have to work a little bit harder to overcome certain things by being dyslexic? Yes, I do. So, I don't look at it as something that, you know, I'm a misfortunate of having. You know, I sometimes think I'm blessed for having it to be able to be where I am today and be able to, you know, be in the business that I'm in, and then also being able to, communicate and write a book about it and talk to people about it.
Right, right. Well, it's a fantastic analogy, right? And I even spoke about it a little bit at D-Scoop, and it was about embracing uncertainty. And I used the analogy of the African impala, that these amazing animals that can jump 10 feet in the air and 30 feet long, you can keep them in an enclosure in a zoo with a 3-foot wall. And the moral to that story is that they can't see where their feet would land. So that's why they won't jump. That's why they wouldn't leave. And so it's interesting, right? Because I think the world and people in general and our industry, we're almost, our muscles atrophy because we don't want to know the outside world. You know, there's a fear of, we don't know where our feet will land. There's a fear of not having success. And so when I hear your story, it's almost like embracing the adversity and, it had to have been a scary thing, right? To eventually, because you were up in front of 2,000 people talking.
Yes. Yes.
And so, I mean, at some point you just were like, screw it, man. I'm stepping forward and I'm going to do it. And so embraced it. And then the next thing you're doing it every year, and that thing grows and goes international. And is that right? Is that a correct analogy?
That is very, very correct. And in the book, it talks a little bit about this story. As a matter of fact, the very start of the book. And when Lita Wood,
yep.
And with HP and D Scoop, and then Eric Hawkinson, well, they asked me to go speak to the group at China Print. And they're a large event that takes place over in Beijing.
Right.
And I thought, well, okay, sure, I'll try. And Lita says, Larry, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine, you know. So when I got over there, and there was like 2,700 people.
Wow.
I thought, oh, goodness gracious. I mean, what in the world am I going to do? And I was extremely nervous. And I just kept thinking, well, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. And then, of course, there was most of the people there, they didn't really speak English. And they had translators there. The translators were telling me how to speak and, you know, not have any slang. Well, it's hard for a Texas guy not to have any slang or accent.
Right.
And so then they called my name, and, man, Eric just patted me on the shoulder and he said, Larry, you're going to be fine. Well, as I was walking upstage, he went straight back to the back. You know, and I thought, well, he thinks I'm going to be fine, and he doesn't want to see me crash and burn. And during the presentation, of course, it was I had rehearsed it many, many, many times. And of course, I had a teleprompter, and there was a lot of tools that I was able to use while I was up there. And thank goodness there was bright lights, because I could not really see the audience that was there. I could see that, you know, the ones that were in front of me. And, you know, when you're talking to a group like that, Mark, there's hard to have any feedback. Number one, there's a delay in the conversation, and there's a different culture that you're talking to.
Right.
And so I kept thinking, am I bombing, or is everything okay? And so anyway, so after I finished, you know, my speech to them, and it was probably 20 minutes, probably maybe 25 minutes. They all clapped, and they were very, very polite. Well, right after that, I had another session that I was going to be talking to the group about, you know, I showed them a video of my shop and some of the equipment that I operate off of and, you know, some ideas and tips and tricks. Well, when I got to that session and I got up on stage, it was standing room only.
Man.
It was probably a room built for 300, and there was at least 500 in there. Wow. And then I thought, oh my goodness. So I did something right. So here again, you know, I went through and I showed them the video, talked about my printing business. Not a whole lot of response back, because I asked them if there was any questions, because, you know, at the end, you always have a little bit of question and answer. And they did not have really any questions or anything. I said, well, okay. So it was over, and I thanked them. You know, I bowed graciously and thanked them very much for allowing me to come speak. And I'm telling you, when my feet hit the door threshold, they came at me from all corners to come in to talk to me. And a lot of them had their interpreters in tow with them, you know.
Right.
And I bet I spent an hour outside the door answering questions for all of those guys.
Wow.
And it was wonderful, you know, that I was able to do that. It was wonderful, you know, that they truly, you know, wanted to be engaged with what I had to say. But it just went to show me that even the printers in China or in India or in Taiwan or in Vietnam, when I was over there, well, they all had the same issues we did.
Right.
In the U.S. There was no different. We were all printers, and we were, you know, unique. We were all the same. So that was wonderful in doing that. And I still talk to some of those guys today. And I mean, it's wonderful that I have I had all those experiences, you know, globally at different regions throughout the world, because I talked to different guys. I mean, I talked to Sunny Pang in Malaysia. You know, I talked to Kristen over in Kuala Lumpur, and I talked to people in Australia. I talked to people all through Europe and over in Spain. I mean, it's just wonderful what took place from that event.
Right.
That people understood, you know, we all need help.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I think it's, you know, like I said, I think it's a fabulous analogy overall. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's overcoming dyslexia to be successful in business and to speak in front of thousands of people. And I, you know, the whole idea around being an entrepreneur, I want to ask you about your perspective on the industry and, you know, the future. But before I do that, I certainly don't want you to give away too much of the book, but there were a couple things in there that I thought resonated and would love you to touch upon. First and foremost, it is this idea. Well, the two things are the mentoring piece and the cooperative mindset. Can you speak to those for us?
Oh, you better believe I can. The mentoring piece is that I had a mentor that helped me when I was, I should say I had several mentors that when I was growing up, and I really looked at them to help me. And I think they are some individuals that defined me and helped me grow to where I am today. And I had several young, and I call them kids, you know, they were fresh out of college, that came to work for me that I hired, and I could just see that there was growth in them, and they just needed a little bit of guidance. I don't know if you remember Megan Sawyer that worked for me, Mark.
Oh yeah.
I thought you might have. And
yep.
And then I had Tim Gandry that worked for me, and then I had Melissa Sims that worked for me. Well, when they came to me, they were a little bit lost in their way. Well, I worked with them, and I told them, I said, you got to understand something, that you're going to outgrow me at some point. And when we get to that point, we need to discuss it to give you guidance of your next level in life. Well, I'm so proud of the kids where they're at. Well, now Megan Sawyer, I mean, she is the marketing director for Canon Ventures, which they are an angel investor group for startups, for young startups, for companies. And I mean, doing a fabulous job. But Melissa Sims, well, she's now the lead designer, packaging designer for Levi Strauss.
Oh, wow.
And Tim Gandry, he is a financial advisor for Northwest Mutual. So these kids, and they thank me. I talk to these kids every week, and they thank me to this day for helping them and giving them guidance of where they are today. So it, you know, it kind of puts an emotional piece in you when you talk about it.
Oh yeah.
But so far as a cooperative, this is how DScoop was started. And also, Think was started, on that mindset also.
Right.
And I think a lot of this came from Francis McMahon. And mm-hmm. then when I started talking to him, I said, Francis, we need an open community where we can all talk without feeling threatened by any means, where we can all grow from each other. I said, because I promise you, there's enough business out there for us all. And I'll never forget it when I had 8 guys that were around me, and I had them at lunch right when I chose them out of the group that was there at the first DScoop. And I looked at a guy next to me, his name was Bob, and I said, Bob, I would like for you to share a success story that you did for your business that you feel has made you successful.
Mm-hmm.
He told me, he says, Larry, I don't know if I feel comfortable with doing that because I've got competitors here.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Bob, let me tell you, the way I look at it, you are going to give away one success. You're going to receive back 7 successes.
Right.
So a 1-for-7 trade is a hell of a deal.
Right.
and that's how, and just like the community at DScoop, when you're there, everybody's pretty open. And they will say, you know, this is what happened. This is what I did. You know, I did this. I did this. It was absolutely horrible. You know, it just didn't work. So you got best case, you got worst case. And again, I have people call me. I've got competitors here in town that they'll call me and say, Larry, you know what, let me tell you what I took place and it didn't work, or I've got this customer and I need help on getting them. Let me tell you what to do. And where not only do I have my cooperative community within DScoop, I have my own cooperative community where I've got regional business owners, you know, that are in the print, and then I've got national, and then I've got global printers that I can talk to, I can reach out to, because I've asked a lot of printers. Matter of fact, I asked them in this last session that I had, how many of you here are global printers? Well, out of the 100 people that were in there, I think 1 or 2 of them had raised their hand.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're wrong. All of y'all are global printers. If you build your cooperative for you and your company where you can reach out through any region of the world, any region, you know, of the U.S. or locally, you will become a global printer. Because here in Houston, you know, naturally, we've got, you know, huge company, global companies, a lot of oil and gas companies. And I do work for them in other regions of the world. And I call the guys that I know and say, hey, you know, Sonny, I need this, you know, Irwin, I need this, and get these. And they jump on it and handle it. And it gets it delivered. And of course, I don't have to deal with customs. I don't have to deal with shipping or any kind of delays. same way that flips over to me. They send me business for the U.S. So it's just, it's a win-win for both of us. Everybody wins, you know. I mean, it's usually, you know, the printer over there in that region wins, I win, the customer wins, and HP wins because they get the clicks. Because normally it's Indigo work, not all of it, you know, but normally it is digital type work.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, not only is your book and overcoming your challenge and your life a great analogy. I mean, even D-Scoop, I think, is a remarkable metaphor for how business truly gets done and is successful. I think when I first went there, and I was really taken by it, because I'll never forget this. I was on a bus between, I don't know, they were shuttling us somewhere, and I was listening to this guy talking to one of the people from HP, and they had said to them, the person said, you know, listen, at the time, they said, you guys don't have the best stuff, but I had to be here. And I thought, isn't that interesting, right? I remember talking to some other people thinking, you know, that's the number one way to sell, is to do kind of an authentic, sincere, non-selling community where, you know, ideas are shared and there's inspiration. And it really, you know, I think it's been something that's outside of this product solution-oriented world. I mean, the industrial age is done, and pushing product is just not the way it gets done. So it's a remarkable analogy. And I'm taken with your story about sharing success stories, because, gosh, I mean, real learning and real knowledge comes from sharing. And it goes back to that African Impala analogy I was telling you, that, you know, we sometimes we're just so locked down in our own world, and there's a fear of not only knowing the outside world, but sharing a little bit of ourselves, because we think, okay, I got to protect what I've got. And don't you think that's symptomatic of our industry a bit?
Oh, very, very much so. You know, and then I'll do a little bit of a flip side on that. You know, the printing industry is very capital intensive.
Right.
Because the equipment's not cheap. You know, the software not cheap. There's a tremendous amount of learning that you have to do. And the printing industry used to be a craftsman's business. Mm-hmm. The way the presses were operated, the cylinder presses were, you know, the bindery function of it. I mean, it was hands-on craftsmen. Well, now, you know, it's a younger type. We need a younger type of employee that understands, you know, electronics, understands automation, understands, you know, the digital world, understands, you know, how you communicate digitally. So, you know, we do need younger people within our industry, because I see that. I mean, I'm an old guy, you know, of course I'm in the industry because I like it, you know, and I love my customers, and I enjoy, you know, figuring different things out. But yes, you know, we're in the mix of a transition, but it's a great transition. I'm very excited for it. You know, I run several, you know, different digital presses, inkjet presses, but you know, I still have my big iron out there, my Heidelbergs, and they still run every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to, you know, this has been awesome, and I just think that, you know, beyond the advice of getting this book, which I think is just, it's not just so, it's just not cool that you wrote it, but the whole story is fantastic. I think it's fantastic. But let me ask you a question before I let you go. So your advice to our industry or our readership, you know, in terms of this time and as they move forward, what would be your sage advice?
I think the number one thing is to reach, like I've said before, is to reach out to peers, reach out to people in your industry. reach out to the equipment manufacturers, reach out to the software manufacturers, reach out to the substrate manufacturers. You cannot learn enough information about print and printing to help you succeed. And still, here again, feel free to, you know, open up, you know, show your underwear. It's okay,
right?
You know, to be exposed out there, because you will get the reward back that will help you succeed in the printing business.
Right. Yeah. That vulnerability is, it's hard, but it goes a long way. And taking those risks, you know, that people think of risk and they think it's, oh, risky to buy a piece of equipment. No, it could be risky getting up in front of, you know, 2,000-3,000 Asians, right? And speaking,
yes,
it could be, you know,
yes,
it could be, it's risky to write a book, it, all this kind of stuff. And yet it's also the stuff that's enriching. And I think that's fantastic. So, well, Larry, I was so excited to see you, and I'm really glad that we pulled this off and we were able to spend some time. Just a reminder to the listeners that the book is called Business Cards and Shoe Leather: How Dyslexia Helped Me Found One of the World's Premier Business Cooperatives. It's got a foreword by our boy Jeff Hazlett, which is pretty cool. And
yeah.
I encourage everybody to go get a copy, which is actually on Amazon. So I can't thank you enough for taking the time, and we need to do this again.
Oh, I'd love to, Mark. It's always great talking to you.
Yeah, and when I'm down, I got to swing by Houston, and we'll grab a beer.
Oh, I'd love to.
All right. Hey, Larry, thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Mark, thank you.
All right, take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Larry Vaughn. I think that you'll obviously share my belief that his story is inspirational, that it is a reminder to embrace adversity, to overcome some of the things that we all have, and to find a better version of ourselves. I am super proud of him. I think that this book, Business Cards and Shoe Leather, How Dyslexia Helped Me Found One of the World's Premier Business Cooperatives, is an excellent read. And I think that you'll not only glean some inspiration from his stories, but maybe incorporate some of the things that he talked about into your business. Clearly, things like mentoring, not only finding mentors, but being a mentor, is critical to the longevity of your success. And the co-op mindset, the idea that we need to share more to learn more. And he had some really compelling things to talk about. So again, my sincere thanks to Larry. And again, I'm super, super excited for him. A reminder that this has been Brush Strokes. It's a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. And it was brought to you today by Conduit Incorporated, where we do custom content and build community for you. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. Guys, thanks so much for listening. I really appreciate it. In a couple weeks, we'll have another really fascinating podcast for you. And until then, remember, be the buffalo. Take care.